Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, beloved. This is Soul in the City, and this is Linda. And I'm so glad we had this time together at 6:30. So, you know how we do it. We sit back, we relax, and we just go with the flow, and that's what we're going to do. This is live talk radio, empowerment radio. Today we're going to be talking about radical forgiveness. I'm just going to, for God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten son. That's radical love. And I came up with this formula in my meditation time that radical love equals radical forgiveness. And Christ, when he died on the cross, said, "Forgive them, Lord, for they know not what they do." And a lot of times when people do things against us, you're just in an unevolved state, and they don't know what they're doing to us. So it takes a radical kind of love to release, to let go, and to move forward. I'm going to play this song by Martha Menendez, and then we'll come back. I have a very special guest. Take a deep breath. Love radically so that you can forgive radically.
Never leave me, never forsake me, I will never leave you. You show mercy, never hold me, not like you, I'll never fall. Never leave me, never forsake me, I will never be alone. You show mercy, never hold me, not like you, I'll never know.
In the day.
that's what you promised me. See, that's what you promised me. Oh, that's what you promised me. So I'll hold on to nothing. I know that you have me. And unending mercy.
So, like Martha Menendez says, I hold on to nothing because I know that you promised me unending mercy. And forgiveness is, I'm just going to go to a passage in Isaiah that says, even I am he, and this is God saying, that I blotteth out your transgressions for mine own sake and will not remember thy sin. So he blots out our transgressions for his own sake, for our sake. Even when somebody does something against us, we have to forgive them mostly for us because we stay stuck in a rut, we stay stuck in a place, and when we do not forgive, we're holding and we're just locked and bound in our past and in a bad space and place. So hold on to nothing and just allow your hands to be open and free and allow you to forgiveness is really about freeing yourself. So with that said, I am going to introduce my guest and let her tell you a little bit about herself. Hi, Lynn.
Hey there, Linda. You know, it's funny, your name is Linda, and my name is actually Linda, too, but people started calling me Lynn a long time ago. I guess I won't really date myself and tell you how long ago, but because there were always so many Lindas in my classes and everything, my friends decided to nickname me Lynn just so that four of us wouldn't answer when somebody, you know, called our name. So it's just funny that I'm sitting here talking to you. It just reminded me that, yeah, my name is Linda, too, but, you know, it means beautiful, so... I'm sure.
And
yeah, Linda means beautiful.
Spirit.
In Spanish, it means beautiful.
It does. I've heard that, and I say, well, we both have a beautiful spirit. So.
Yeah, and you know, you do need to be careful what you name a thing because it does become that. So there's a lot of energy in our words. Our words are power. And every word that you speak is a form of prayer. So as you make your statements and affirm what your experience is and give names to things, you claim it. So you have to, that's part of the power of watching, you know, what you speak, which is one of the reasons why forgiveness is so important, because so often and more often than not, we very carelessly say things without thought to what they mean or the intent or how it may make someone else feel. And then, of course, we hear through our own filters what we want to hear, and very often what is said can be misunderstood, and again, you know, we get offended. So that's, you know, it's just some of the lessons of forgiveness. So now you were telling me, you know, this, your whole concept of radical forgiveness, which I guess when any way you look at forgiveness, it has an air of radicalness about it because, you know, we come from a world, a nation, where forgiveness really isn't something we're comfortable with.
It's right, not and to forgive like that is a radical act. To really,
yes, it is, you know.
About it.
I mean,
it's a radical act.
Our whole world is built so on vengeance and getting back and paying back. And, I mean, even with what we're dealing with today in the world, all this, the wars with the people of the Middle East and Afghanistan and so many other nations and countries and cultures around the world, it's all about getting back and holding hatred and fighting for principles that we all claim we believe, but very rarely practice with any sense of sincerity or truth. So for me, with my life experience over the years, I came to understand that part of my life purpose here was to cleanse and heal a lot of spiritual energy by learning what forgiveness really meant. And I have been given a lifetime of opportunities to learn what forgiveness is and to practice it on levels that most people can't even imagine that they would ever have to experience or practice forgiveness. Starting way back, well, I guess when I was a kid, you know, we all grew up in various forms of dysfunctional families and what have you, and mine was no different. You know, we had our dramas and traumas and all kinds of things going on, but I had an older sister who had a little bit of a mental illness problem. She was an undiagnosed schizophrenic, and I didn't even realize that she was until, I guess I was in my 40s. When my mother and I were sitting down talking one day about some things that happened, and she finally told me that way back when my sister was 11 years older than I am, and way back when she was in high school, she had been diagnosed as a schizophrenic, and the doctors told my mother that they should take her in for treatment. But, you know, I guess I will have to kind of date myself a little bit, kind of put things in perspective. But I was 60 years old back in November last year, so my sister was already going into her teens when I was born. And so I was born in 1951, so when she was diagnosed as a schizophrenic, this was in the middle 50s, it was not something that you publicly recognized or acknowledged. Back in those days, we took our family members that had mental problems and locked them away. You know, we didn't talk about it. If anything, they were allowed to continue to behave or do whatever they did. Or if you could afford to put them in an institution, you know, families were wealthy enough to do that, they would do that. I mean, the Kennedys, there's, you know, a very famous story about what they did with one of their daughters who had some mental issues. But at the point where we were, it was just something that wasn't talked about. And we just, all that was said basically was that she had some behavioral problems and she was into drugs and things, so a lot of it was attributed to her drug use. But she was very difficult. So sometimes she would be fine for years and she would be just wonderful, you know, go to church and loving and kind and everything. And then all of a sudden she'd disappear for a week or two and it would be like, uh-oh, you know, where is she now? What is she doing? And when she'd come back, she'd be out, you know, be out into this other person again. So as we grew up, there was a lot of jealousy between her and me. She was always jealous of, I guess, the fact that I was much more calm and had much more stability in my life. And so there were things that she would do to me as I grew up. I mean, caused major, serious problems throughout my life. And so I was always having to find ways to forgive her and understand her and deal with her outbreaks and dramas. And she caused a lot of problems in the family over the years. So that was kind of like when I started realizing as a young woman that I needed to learn how to forgive her because she was just crazy, you know. I mean, literally, she would be crazy sometimes. And not knowing what the cause was at that point in time, I just, you know, accepted it. But then over the years, as I grew and what have you, I got into, you know, I was married. I've been married 3 times. I was married for 10 years, almost 10 years each time. So it wasn't like they were casual relationships. They were long-term relationships that required a lot of dealing with to get through them. The first marriage was, I was young. I had my 2 children through that marriage, and then when he and I split up, I had to learn to forgive him because he was unfaithful. He just didn't know how to stay away from the other ladies. So that was an exercise in learning to forgive and forget because I didn't want to, number one, I wasn't the kind of parent that wanted to have my children hating their father, and I didn't like fighting. I was a very peaceful person, so I got over it so that they could have him in their lives. But he was an absentee father and one who was very irresponsible, so even though I was okay with him being there, he wasn't. And so I had to learn to accept him like he was and forgive him for not supporting the kids and not supporting me in raising them and being who he was. And I learned to be okay with that. Now, this wasn't a conscious level of forgiveness. It was just who I was. And right. So it became something, you know, that I just let people be who they were and recognize that I couldn't control them. And I think it had to do with me being a very spiritual person to start with from way back when. I always saw things differently than other people did. So it allowed me to grow up with a different perspective of what the scriptures were all about. And I also became very involved in metaphysics early, which, you know, you and I met at the University of Sedona, which is a metaphysical university. I started in that philosophy back in 1977, I think it was. So I was very young at the time I started embracing this new philosophy, and it also helped to open my eyes to a lot of things. And I thank God that I actually did get in it so soon, because with the things that were yet to come, if I had not had the tools and the knowledge that Dr. Masters gave me back in those days, I don't know if I would have survived it. Because as crazy as things were when I started out, you know, in my 20s, it you could kind of say it went downhill from there.
Well, the thing about the power of God inside you, because even when you're not aware of how he builds you up and protects you, the protection, and then you awaken to that knowledge. So it sounds like that's what happened for you.
Well, yeah, you know, we are spiritual beings having a physical experience. And
right.
When you really understand what that means and put it in perspective, you can kind of understand how, if you really embrace that idea, you understand that God is always with you, because God is a part of you. There is no separating from you, from spirit, because it indeed is the life force that keeps us alive. It's what keeps our hearts beating. It's the reservoir of thoughts and ideas and intellect that we all are connected to. It's like, you know, the one mind that we are all a part of. That's why we can share thoughts and ideas, and people can come up with the same concepts. You know, it's we go through our lives experiencing this serendipity where two people think of the same thing, or someone will start to say something and they'll go, oh, I was just thinking the same thing. I mean, if you really embrace the fact that there's only one God, one spirit, and we're all part of it, then it's a little easier to embrace the idea that God lives inside of you. Always has, always will, and that we cannot separate from that life force, because that's what we are. So I kind of learned this early on because of some other, you know, like I said, I was a spiritual person growing up, and it's funny because in my family was a spiritual family too. My mother was Baptist. She was the organist in the church. So needless to say, we were always there. You know, we were participating in every program there was as we were growing up. I sang in choirs and later became a soloist and did all those things. My father was a Methodist. That was the church that his family belonged to. And my grandmother was a Seventh-day Adventist. And
wow.
Then as a child, yeah. And as a child, I remember my mother wasn't real insistent on the churches we went to, as long as we could go to one. And for some reason, around the age of maybe 12 or 13, there was a little four-square church that was down on the corner from us. I don't know why my sister and I decided to explore that church, but for about a year she let us go to Sunday school there, and, you know, it was a different church that she was going to, but it was still the same, you know, principles. So she was okay with that. And then when I was about, I guess it was about the age of, what was 1977, what would that be, 20-something, my early 20s, I guess, when I decided, I discovered metaphysics and decided that maybe this was the life for me, that this philosophy and this spiritual path was more suited to my personality. And since I've been exposed to so many religions all my life anyway, I was happy to find that this philosophy embraced them all. We actually studied teachings from every religion, and Dr. Master's philosophy was basically, we are in pursuit and teach the truth, whatever form that is. The diversity of the people on this planet requires various approaches to God, so that each can grow and understand and learn and be connected according to their levels of understanding, their, you know, spiritual development and their beliefs, because culturally we have some different beliefs. So, you know, with his teachings and understanding it from that perspective, I was okay that not everybody believed exactly the same way that I did. My whole thing was, I don't care really how you practice it or what you believe, as long as it's the truth that you are seeking, and your ultimate goal is to embrace and believe that, you know, and the truth is what it is, regardless as to how you interpret it. You know, I often say a rose is a rose no matter what name you call it. It's still a rose. And so for that, from that perspective, I was able to allow and be okay with people being whatever denomination, religion, or, you know, whatever they want to practice. I don't care, as long as they got something. That was my only requirement. As long as you believe that God is whatever, you can, you know, I'm okay with where you are on your path. But then as I got older,
respect everybody's path. You don't have to believe. You know, I believe in God, and I believe Jesus is the way for me. This is my path, but I respect other paths.
That's really what it's all about. It's about respect.
Yeah, I don't always have to agree. We can all be fed the same food. I don't have to eat the same food on my plate that you eat, but I respect that you like that. I just have to respect for where you are in your journey and walk my walk, because if I walk the way Christ walked, then that'll draw some people.
You know, and it's about the truth. If your goal is to live and express and seek truth, you will always find the common denominator as people come together, regardless as to their cultural differences, language differences, or interpretations. It will still come together because it's based on one thing, and that is truth. The problems that we encounter come from everybody's egotistical perspectives and positions of believing that their way is the only way. That, you know, when you get into that of it's my way or no way, and, you know, I'm right and you're wrong and you're not good enough and all these things, those go into the ego judgments, and that's where we end up with problems. But as long as people are coming together, you know, sharing truth and awareness and acceptance of it and acceptance of how it differs, then we're fine. I mean, everybody recognizes that color is color, and everybody's got different colors that are their favorites. But you don't get mad at somebody because their favorite color is blue and yours is red, you know, or someone else loves yellow. It's like, oh, okay, well, that's just a variation of tones. It's all color, and, you know, you might even come in one day and wear all three colors. It's okay, you know. But, and to me, religion and interpretation are basically that, various colors of spirit put here for the intention of allowing all of us to learn and be on this path together, which, if you look at the rainbow, it has every color that we can see and even not see, but you don't see the colors fighting each other. You know, they are there as a spectrum of the one light. Huh?
Right. That goes back to the whole thing about radical love, because to me, radical love is I love you because Christ loved you.
Yeah.
Wherever you are, he loved, you know, those who had evolved to a certain place or those who had not. And so I just think it's important for you to walk your path because, you know, your walk, your peaceful walk, that will draw, you know, as they say, Christ said, lift me up and I'll draw men to me. So I think when you walk your path, you don't have to argue, you don't have to fight your case, you don't have to, you know, do all of that. You just have to love.
It's true, and love opens your eyes to so many things and allows you to be tolerant and patient with so much. You know, it's like, you know, people who love each other have an incredible amount of tolerance and patience for those that they love to walk their path, no matter how they may vary and what they may do in that process. We see, you know, excuse me, people every day who can tolerate incredible amounts of violence and abuse for those that they love, where they wouldn't even stand for a word from someone that they're not, quote-unquote, in love with, that they don't care about. So it's all about unconditional love and patience and tolerance and being able to see things from a perspective of, I don't know everything about your path or what your journey is about, but I can love you through it. I may not have to agree with you. I don't have to be in your presence while you're doing your thing. You know, but I can love you from over here and pray for you and allow you to grow and develop according to whatever your journey is. And this is where, you know, my platform comes into play. You know, just to finish my story up real quick, as I mentioned, you know, things went downhill from there. It wasn't like I had this horrible experience of my own to go through. I had a lot of things in my life that became very difficult. My second husband had a drug problem. He was a recovering addict when we married. I had known him for a long time, but I hadn't been close friends with him for a while and didn't realize that he had gotten into this difficult path. He was clean when we married, but then things started happening in my life that sent him over the deep end, and he got back on the drugs, and then he couldn't stay off. So that was a difficult relationship for a while. My son and my sister, the sister that I mentioned that was a schizophrenic, well, let me just run down the timeline. After my first husband and I broke up and I got over his, you know, his stuff with the other women and everything, I was single for about 8 years, I guess. And then I got married again in 1985. In 87, my oldest sister passed away from cancer. You know, that was just dealing with the loss of a sister. That was difficult. Then in June of 88, my son was killed in a drive-by shooting. That was really hard. It was 3 weeks after he was murdered that my second husband went off the deep end back into drugs and turned violent and tried to kill me. So I had to deal with that and going, and we, the guy that killed my son was arrested the same night, so we went through the trials with him to try to get him convicted, and we ended up with 3 convictions and 2 hung juries over a period of 8 years. It was 5 trials, and they ended up letting him go in 1995. He was in jail for 8 years, but through those 5 years, or those 8 years that I had to go through those 5 trials, I had to process through this feeling of, you know, what he did to my family, killing my son and everything. So that was a big one. That was the big lesson in forgiveness. That was bigger than all the others. Learning to forgive him. Huh?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That would be forgiveness. Yeah.
Well, and, you know, for a lot of people, they never get to that point. But, you know, the way I looked at it and the way I realized, and my mother kind of helped me through this process while she was alive, but she helped me through it to understand that if you don't forgive him and let go of this, then he not only kills Tony, but he kills you too, because now your life is going to be based on this anger and resentment you have for him, and you give him all your power. You give your life away to this act of violence because, you know, and this is the thing that people don't realize. You can hate someone and be angry at someone about something they've done or said to you, and you carry this energy, this toxic energy inside of you. They go on about their business, and in most cases, they forget about it or at least learn to live with it, and you're carrying all this energy that keeps you up at night, that makes you crazy, that makes you angry, that makes you, you know, go off and do all kinds of things, not to mention compromising your health. And this person is not even around.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, what did you say?
They're going on with their lives, and they're living life, and you're stuck in this place.
You know, and not only that, but suppose, and that person really doesn't want to be around you after this because they don't want to feel your rage and your anger and resentment, so they avoid you. If they're someone you know, if they're someone you don't know, they're going on about their business. And what if they die during the time that you're hating them? Then you're hating a dead person. They're not even around, and yet you're carrying all of this anger and resentment and destroying your own life based on something that happened that has to be purged and healed and let go. So, you know, that was one thing. And then just to briefly go on, 2 years after, almost 2 years to the day after my son was killed, the sister that was a schizophrenic, she was murdered because she was a material witness to a kidnapping. So,
wow.
You know, June became a very difficult month for me because I had, on the 21st of June was the anniversary of my son's murder, and then the 26th of June was the anniversary of my sister's murder. And then, you know, so it was a lot of things going on over the years and what have you, and I had some other things happen, you know, with family members passing and other events. And then I remarried, I divorced my second husband in 94. My mother passed away in 95. I remarried again in 1997, and things were going along well. That actually looked like it was going to promise to be a very good marriage. But then in 9/11, my husband's company was destroyed because their business relied heavily on the Asian market. And after 9/11, his business crashed. And, I mean, it was a big loss. They went from making $20 million a year down to having to sell the company and taking a loss. So he went into a depression. And he never came out of it. And he became verbally and emotionally abusive. And that was another whole thing for me to have to deal with. So there was a lot of forgiveness that had to take place there. Well, we finally split up in 2004, and it was a very bitter divorce where I had to sell all of my assets and lost my career and all kinds of things. And I actually went from living an affluent life to living on the assets and income that I had left. Well, we got divorced. Our divorce was final in February of 2005. He drops dead in July of 2005, on the 4th of July. And then 6 months after that, my youngest sister passed away. So, you know, all of this was going on through my life, not to mention all the other stuff of what I was dealing with of my own. You know, there's the regular ups and downs. So I found myself, after my youngest sister died, in this deep depression, and being that I had been an entrepreneur and had been, you know, been self-employed for years and all of that, I couldn't get a job working with corporate company, because there's this kind of like unspoken rule, if you're bold enough to go out there and be self-employed, we don't want you back. So being that I was in my middle 50s by then, I couldn't find a job. So for 3 years, I was job hunting and living off of what was left of my income. And finally, in around 2007, I ran out of money completely. So then I went into this homeless situation where I was having to live with friends and struggling financially and all kinds of things. So, you know, there are other things that went on between now and then, but just that's just a capsule of how I got to the point of realizing that, perhaps my life purpose here is to understand, embrace, and really live this experience of forgiveness so that I can help other people learn to forgive. Because, indeed, once you learn to forgive and release and heal all that toxic energy, you do learn to – you're free. You learn to take things and strive to not let every little thing upset you to the point where you're constantly going off. You don't hate. You don't get angry at the drop of a hat. You develop a level of patience and understanding with people around you who are less mature, less enlightened, you know, all of those things. And you can finally gain what you would describe as serenity and inner peace.
Right.
You know, I don't hate any of the things or any of the people that hurt me during the years. I have a sense of feeling sorry for them and the journey that they're on, because I realize how much pain they are in. A lot of times people do things and react to you in ways that you think are just them being crazy or being mean or being hateful, but they're in a lot of pain.
Well, and I always say hurt people hurt people.
Yes,
you know, they really do, and a lot of times they're just really this very hurt shell that is, you know, like a hurt animals, scratching out people, basically. And that is sometimes how you really have to look at the person that has done a hurt to you or a harm. They're usually in a very hurtful place in their life.
Exactly. And that when you come to that understanding and you look at things, look at their behavior, you can see that that's where it's coming from. Because people strike out most of the times defensively. You know, people can hurt you unintentionally. That's one thing. But most cases where people are angry and resentful and violent and reactionary or, you know, addicted to drugs and alcohol and all this, they're basically trying to heal the hole in their heart and stop the pain. They just don't know how. And because of the society we live in, we don't do forgiveness well. Even our government, the way we work, you know, present ourselves to the world, the way we function, the way we do things, we do business, we live, is not from a place of forgiveness. It's from a place of, I'm going to pay you back for what you did to me. You know, we call strength vengeance and paying people back, when the truth is it takes an incredibly strong person. Strength is forgiveness. You have to be strong to forgive someone. The weakness
brain of who we are conditioned sometimes to be. You got to, you know, climb on people's back to get ahead and all of that. And so we're kind of conditioned to be.
We are. We're taught to fight. That's what we consider strong. If you fight, if you're ready to turn, you know, and blow and, you know, strike a blow, you're strong and powerful. But no, that's not what power is. That's fear. That's ego. And that actually is weakness, when you feel like you have to punch somebody out in order for, you know, to show your power, that's, you know, if you wouldn't want that done to you. And so, you know, the golden rule, if everybody lived according to the golden rule, forgiveness would be automatic. You know, if you treat people the way you want to be treated, forgiveness would be automatic. Everybody wants to be forgiven for mistakes that they make.
Yes.
You know, everybody wants to be forgiven and their apologies accepted when they realize they've done something wrong. But we don't live that way. We live by the sword and by vengeance. And there, that's where we have these conflicts, so that we're not able to forgive because we think it makes us look weak. When the truth of the matter is, when you are sure of who you are, solid in yourself, know what you're about, you don't need to be, you know, powerful physically. You are power, and people know it and they feel it. And, you know, it's just a matter of expressing and practicing that for people to start to understand, indeed, how much power that really is. People have power over you when they can hurt you, when they can manipulate you and do things to push your buttons. They've got a lot of power because all they have to do is do their little things to set you off, and there you go, like a little puppet on a string.
Right.
You know, but when you can forgive and release that energy and break that bond and connection and they can't push those buttons, I call it taking the buttons away, and they can't make you dance and jump whenever they want you to, then they have no power over you, and you've reclaimed it, and now you are your own person, and you're free.
And that's the place I think that is important to be, that place of freedom for yourself. And sometimes, and I'm going to have you speak on that a little bit, is the person that, to me, that I, in my past and in my life, that I've needed to forgive is myself. Because a lot of times I held on to things when I didn't leave relationships, when I knew that maybe they weren't the best for me, or when I didn't do certain things. And I think some people get stuck in a place where they cannot forgive themselves for whatever reason.
Now that you just kind of hit the nail on the head, and that is exactly right. That's really the most important part of forgiveness. I mean, forgiving other people for things that they've done and releasing them is part of it, but the greatest thing is to forgive yourself for having had the experience, for allowing a situation to develop that puts you in harm's way, or in some cases where people are victimized, like maybe through child abuse or spousal abuse or whatever the case, you know, a violent assault or something like that, where they cannot, you know, connect to how that could have been drawn to them. They forgive themselves, you know, because we can beat ourselves up with guilt for being a victim. We can really do a job on ourselves for feeling less than, or, you know, feeling low about ourselves because something happened to us. You know, rape victims have a lot of guilt, and a lot of it destroys their self-confidence and self-esteem. They become very fearful. They become afraid of every little, you know, bump in the night. Then they feel like they're, you know, that they're dirty and that they are not worthy and all these things because of this experience. And so forgiving yourself for those kinds of events and things, one of my ministers used to call it spiritual terrorism, which we do on ourselves, to be able to forgive yourself for having those experiences and feeling those reactions is really the biggest part of forgiveness. Because if you can do that and finally heal those holds in your heart, let go of the event, let go of the experience, let go of this person, let go of the victim mentality, then you are free, because at this point you finally say, that was something that happened to me in my past. That didn't happen to me now. And the truth of the matter is, it happened to your physical body. Of course, your emotions and your mind felt it. But, you know, just to give a little scientific example of why you should let go of that is, your body, you know, we all always hear about cells dying in our body. Your body basically recycles every cell in your body every 3 to 5 years. So whatever happened to you 5 years ago, the physical cell, the physical body that experienced that event doesn't even exist anymore. It's a whole new thing. But what reimpresses our bodies with the, you know, conditions and the feelings and the illnesses we have is our feelings, our thoughts, our memories. And that can go in, and because we are chemical beings, all of that poison that we inject in our body goes back and reprograms those what should be healthy cells to recreate the conditions that were related to something that happened long ago. That's why we have recurring illness and all kinds of other things that should be healed, but it's the thought patterns and the toxins that we continue to secrete in our bodies that make it create what, you know, is the physical representation of that sick thought or that dysfunctional thought. So my platform is called Forgiveness is Freedom, by the way.
Is in being a person who's gone through quite a bit myself with a couple of marriages and being raped in my past, I had to move past those to when you hold on to that bitterness and anger, because I spent a lot of time being bitter and angry about a lot of stuff, you can physically, that manifests in your being in a physical illness kind of way, because like you said, you're releasing all that poison toxins in your body, and you know, you find yourself with heart disease, high blood pressure. That's because you're holding in all of that what nasty stuff inside of you, and it raises things. It raises your heart rate, your blood pressure, and all of that.
It
creates cancer too.
I call cancer the top, you know, the acid of hatred, because although there are genetic propensities to certain diseases, most cancers are caused by the poison that we carry within our minds, our thoughts, and our hearts that actually eats away. You know, it distorts the cell structure so that the cells become abnormal, and then it just eats away at us. It's, you know, it's a cancer in our spirits that creates this physical representation in our bodies. You know, it's one of those things where, you know, there's a movie, I don't know if you've ever seen it, it's on video, it's called What the Bleep Do I Know? That movie was
a while back, and the movie came up in my mind a few years ago, a few months ago, and I thought, I got to get that movie again, because it's been like a few years since I've seen it, and I need to see it.
It's a wonderful movie. For anybody that wants to understand how the mind works on the body, what addictions are all about, it's like putting it in your face very simply what the scientific process between our thoughts and our bodies is all about, how we program ourselves into behaviors and thoughts and activities with emotional, you know, how we are emotionally imprinted, how we get addicted, you know, and how our bodies handle addictions. And it's the root is all in our minds, and it starts there. And, you know, as the story goes, it starts out talking about this woman who's gone through a very traumatic experience and heartbreak, and she becomes bitter, and she builds a wall around her heart, and then she starts, you know, living her life based on this experience with this one man. Now, she had just one experience, and when I saw that movie, I thought, boy, what would you do if you were me? You know, you're having this experience out of one situation, you know, you would never survive what I have been through. But just to make a long story short, it talks about how the brain secretes certain chemicals based on certain thoughts, which, like drugs, like heroin or you know, cocaine, creates this dependency, because the thought creates this secretion of chemicals that actually goes out and it attaches to the cells in the brain and programs us to be addicted. And love and abuse and all of those things create those same kinds of chemicals that attach to our brains and create this dependency. So whether it's a chemical dependency or an emotional dependency, the process is all the same when it comes to the brain. And in order to change your behavior and your thoughts, whether it's getting off of drugs or getting unaddicted to a person or habit, it has to do with unprogramming the mind, releasing these, you know, reconditioning it to think and believe something different, so that it creates the right chemicals. And, you know, what it does, especially when it comes to relationships, is there are healthy belief systems and chemicals that we have in our body. And when we start doing dysfunctional things or having painful experiences, it's like, if you don't use certain chemicals in your body, they go away and it's replaced by this dysfunctional chemical. In order to get rid of that bad addictive behavior to a person or something, some event, you've got to reprogram it with this other healthy chemical again, so that the old bad chemicals are no longer in use, and then the body gets rid of them. That's why it takes a while to change a habit. You've literally got to reseed your body with these new chemicals, and the old ones have to become obsolete, so the body says, oh, we don't need this bad habit anymore, so now we'll let go of it and replace it with the good stuff. And it's a wonderful movie, and it's very entertaining, too. It's got some real funny scenes and stuff. I highly recommend it. It'll help people understand what they're doing to their bodies with their thoughts and with dependencies, and why it's so hard for us to immediately forgive. It's a process that we go through. But one of the things about my webinar, and I do have one coming up this Thursday, which I'm very excited to tell people about, it's a repeat of one I did last week, which people loved it so much, some of the people that couldn't come asked me to do it again. So I'm doing it this Thursday. It's called Forgiveness is Freedom, and I have some techniques, some exercises, some energy healing techniques that I take everyone through that helps to accelerate the process of this reprogramming and this reseeding of your body chemically to change behaviors and get rid of memories and experiences that keep you stuck, that cause you to be overweight, that cause you to have health problems and to be angry and to not be able to sleep at night and all the things that are associated with these, events in our lives that are never healed. So, for anyone that's interested and wants more information about it, all they need to do is go to my website, which is www.thewomanexec, that's thewomanexec, thewomanexec.com, and on the homepage is a little green link that says Forgiveness is Freedom Registration, and they can click on there. It'll take them to the page where they can register for the seminar. It's only $39.95, which includes a free energy healing, a Reiki session to support you in the process of healing. And for the healing session alone, I charge $45 for 30 minutes. So that's a bonus that you get. So for the whole hour-long webinar, these exercises and the healing to support you in the process of clearing your energy, it's only $39.95. So it's a real bargain. And not only that, but there will be a replay where you can go and plug into it, walk through the exercises with me, over and over and over as many times as you need to for those who have registered. And if you can't be there on Thursday, that's okay. If you register, you still get a copy of the replay so you can listen to it at your convenience.
Sounds like a good thing. So I'd encourage people to go to the website and to get involved. What keeps coming to my mind is in the beginning was the Word, and the Word was made flesh. So a lot of times when you are in that process of beginning to forgive, it begins with the words that you speak and making a connection to God that through the Holy Spirit that you learn to release. Ask through prayer, would you help me to release this unsettling, this place that I'm stuck in? So I just want to say, I have to leave my program with ways to kind of even start that. Start that with a prayer, with an affirmation, with words that you speak. Connecting those words to the Spirit inside of you, the Spirit of God, that Holy Spirit that is inside of you, and it will guide you to a place of forgiveness.
And that is so true because one of the things that I do in this session is I do take everyone through a meditation, a centering meditation, so we can connect spiritually. And I strongly encourage anyone that is struggling with any issue, you may not even realize it. One of the attendees sent me a comment. In fact, it's in my promo. Mark Sullivan, you may remember him from the member site, but he said,
guest.
Huh? Yeah, he is? Oh, great.
Yeah.
When?
Yeah. We haven't made a day, but I know it'll be soon.
Okay. He was saying that as we went through some of the exercises, there were things that came up for him that he had totally forgotten about. And see, this is the other thing about the insidiousness of not forgiving. You can sometimes bury an event, an experience, down in your subconscious if it happened a while back, and not realize that it's having an effect on your life today because you've forgotten about it. But the energy is buried so deep in your subconscious that unless you are doing things to physically, to actually clear it out, to bring it up, look at it, and then, clear it out, it still blocks you and stops you. And the first step is prayer and meditation. And I encourage my clients to pray for openness, acceptance, and awareness. Because, so often we pray for things. Give me a car. Give me a home. Give me money. Give me love. Give me a partner. And, and we're so busy asking for things, we forget to ask for guidance, clarity, and openness. Because, every prayer is answered. It's just that sometimes the answer is not what we want to hear. It's not what we expect. It's not in the form that we're looking for. And so we either say the prayer was not answered or, you know, or we just dismiss it because, like, I don't want to do that. One of my ministers had an example on one of the services she used to do. It's something I remember. She said, suppose you're praying to God, asking for that soulmate, for that perfect love that you've always wanted, that is on this planet, and you've been praying and praying, praying, and the answer comes back, okay, well, you got to go to Alaska. And you go, what? I got to move to Alaska. Wait a minute. I don't want to move to Alaska. Well, you know, maybe that's where that perfect place, that person is right now. And in order for you to connect with that person, it didn't really mean that you have to go move there and stay. Maybe you meet and they decide to come back, you know, to where you've been living. But the thing is, if you want to meet that person, your prayer was answered. It's just that the connection you're going to have to make is in Alaska. So unless you're willing to be flexible, be open, and accept the answer to your prayer, sometimes we can't have what we ask for. So, you know, with forgiveness, because it's a very difficult thing for many people, the one thing we need to start doing first as we are approaching the idea of being able to release and let go is to pray for the courage and for the openness to accept what we have to do in order to release this person, because so many people are so set in the fact that I'm not forgiving them for what they did, I'll never let go of that, you know, that they've got to get their minds ready, prepare their energies and their minds and their bodies to start the process of releasing. And that in and of itself sometimes is, you know, that's like step one, and that can take a while for some people.
And it's okay. It's a process, and I think your heart becomes softer. I say, Lord, soften my heart. Because sometimes when you are filled with that unforgiveness, your heart becomes like a hard shell. So soften my heart, so that process of releasing and letting go and always remembering that it's for you and others. Because I also feel like as a mother or daughter or sister or whatever, when you're harboring all that unforgiveness, it is not only affecting you, it's affecting those around you, those people you work with, those people closest to you, your family, your immediate family. You're just kind of sprouting this stuff all around.
And that's true of men, too. You know, many women, many of us have had experiences with men who seem to have this, like, repressed anger. We don't know why are they so angry. Why do they strike out and react to us in the way that they do? Men carry a lot of repressed anger for things that happened to them in their childhoods or experiences that they've had, you know, during their adult life, resentments that have built up over things. And, you know, men are taught to be so hard and so strong and so set that, you know, like some men will tell you, I never change my mind, or I never say, you know, yes, I never give in. And it's a habit that they have that even when they want to, they feel it's unmanly for them to show a softer side. And so, you know, their families, their children, their wives or girlfriends get this hostility and this resentment and this hardness from them. And they don't like it. They don't feel good being that way. But in many, many situations, they don't know how else to be. So for them, you know, prayer and meditation to start softening this place of understanding about themselves so that they can start to realize that, no, being hard and set and concrete and difficult does not mean that you're masculine and manly. It means you're hurt and need to heal. Because, you know, Jesus wasn't that way, and Jesus did not teach us to be that way, and that was the most powerful man on earth. You know, it's a matter of understanding what true strength and courage really is, and it takes a lot of strength and courage to forgive. And you may not forget, it doesn't mean, now one thing I want to explain about forgiveness that I did not clarify before, forgiveness has nothing to do with condoning or accepting an act, experience, or event. It doesn't even mean that you have to allow that person back in your life. Forgiveness is all about healing, releasing, and letting go of the things that hurt you, that stop you, and hold you back. So when you're thinking about, I need to forgive this person, it does not mean for 1 minute that you have to allow that person to say hello to you ever again. All it's doing is giving you permission to not have that experience be with you every day for the rest of your life. That you can finally say, I'm done with that. When I think about it, it doesn't hurt. I don't feel that twinge in the pit of my stomach. And when I lay down to go to sleep, I'm not jittery and all tied up in knots because of all the things that I'm afraid of or angry about or resentful of. You know, you might even turn over and you know, instead of being mad at your husband or wife, turn over and say, you know, honey, I just want to let go of that. You know, we had that argument, but I don't want to sleep on that. and let it go, you know. And, boy, would that change a few marriages, you know.
Well, it says in the Bible, don't let the, I think, the sun go down on your anger. And I, not married anymore, but when I always will try that, I always say that because there's been times in my past marriages that I held on. I was mad all night, woke up mad, didn't speak. And I just feel for wives out there, then what's the tone you're setting for the household? You know, for your children, is everybody sitting on eggshells because you're holding that unforgiveness? You know, let it go. Being the woman that's single now, I could give some, what they say, advice to the married ladies, baby.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know how the old saying goes, if mama's happy, everybody's happy. If mama's not happy, ain't nobody happy. So, you know, for us women, the wives and mothers and girlfriends, you know, we have to recognize that for the most part, now this is not true in every situation, but for the most part, we do set the tone of what, you know, how, of the environment of our homes, you know, whether there's joy or sadness or fear or whatever, you know, we do have a lot of influence over what that is. And when you mentioned going to sleep on anger, you know, I have to bring up this one thing that people must remember, because I had a friend it happened to many, many years ago. But remember, none of us are promised to wake up the next morning. And when you go to sleep on anger, you're taking a chance that your partner could die during the night and you never get the chance to say you're sorry. That's just the more guilt and resentment and anger and fear and all this stuff that you get to carry with you in addition to the loss of that loved one. And once that person is gone, all of a sudden everything that was said and done has no meaning or importance. It's gone in an instant the minute you realize that that person isn't there anymore. So, you know, if for nothing else, let go of that anger. Settle it if you can before you go to bed at night, because you never know whether one of you is going to wake up the next morning or go to work and not come home. I mean, it happens. We see it every day. So, and, you know, forgiveness, reconciliation, and resolution is so important to our joy and our happiness, and we cannot experience joy and happiness without it. So, you know, people talk about, walk around talking about, I just want to be happy. Really? Well, what about letting go of some of that stuff? You know,
and
if you really want to be happy. Huh?
Negative mess. I call it that, junk in your trunk.
Oh, yes. I like that one. Junk in your trunk.
In your trunk. Yeah, get rid of it. Let it go.
Yep, you know, it's like cleaning out an old closet, or, you know, you over the years you move from place to place and you have these boxes that you just drag around forever. Most of the time you forget what's even in there, and you're just carrying these boxes around, and you hide them in a closet or a room or in the garage, and, you know, you don't even know what's in there. And if you need something that's in one of those boxes, you go buy it again anyway because you can't remember which box it's in. So it's like clean out your closet. Clean out your mental, emotional, and spiritual closet, and stop dragging this ball and chain around, because all it does is hold you back, make you sick, make you unhappy, and everybody else around you too. You forget how to smile. You get how to enjoy, you know, the little things in life that are actually the most important things. We accumulate stuff, you know, all of our possessions and worldly goods, but they don't make you happy. It's what is inside of you and those who are around you, their joy and their happiness and your own joy and happiness, that really is the important things that we have in our lives, and we forget about that sometimes. We trivialize them to the point where we think that they don't matter, but they really are all that matters. All you have to do is have an experience where all of the material things are taken away, and your perception will shift in a moment.
And I so
you ask the one who's been through a hurricane or a tornado,
yeah.
These people that are going through tornadoes.
Well, and bless them, Lord. We just ask for, you know, blessings and strength and restoration for them.
You know, and for them, all you hear them saying over and over again, all this stuff can be replaced. All that matters is that everybody's okay. We didn't lose anybody, that we're all right. That's all that matters. And in that moment, that is all that matters. And you go on, and for those people, I would dare say that their lives changed in that instant that tornado went through and wiped out, you know, all of their worldly possessions, their homes, their jobs, and everything. And when they start rebuilding and move forward, they have a different perspective of what's important.
Well, so, with the midst of, I just want to thank you. It has been profound. I want to invite you to come. And just really thank you for sharing your wisdom and your experiences. And I'm really encouraging everybody to check out her webinar. I'm sure that is awesome, I will be okay. So thank you, Lynn.
Let me give them the address just one more time, because I know they probably didn't remember it and maybe didn't have a pencil, but just go to www.thewomanexec.com and click on the green link. I'm going to send the information to Linda, and you can contact her for it if you didn't get it during the webinar or during our time here tonight. And thank you so much for having me on as a guest. It was wonderful, and we have to do this again sometime.
Definitely. This is an open invitation, so we'll make that happen. Thank you so much, Lynn. I appreciate it.
You're welcome, and thanks again. Good night, everybody. Have a wonderful evening.
Okay, everybody. This is Soul in the City, where we aspire to take you higher and higher in the spirit. We had a wonderful conversation about the process of radical love and radical forgiveness. Forgiveness is a radical act, so be radical. Love somebody radically and forgive them radically. This is Soul in the City, and this is Linda. Be blessed because you are. Thank you, and good night.